This is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review, the content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, On the Sunny Side of the Street by the Sid Lawrence Orchestra from 1930, represents the special theme for today's program, Music About Cities. Given the vast array and thousands of such songs to choose from, I tried to select ones that represented a wide diversity of musical genres and geographical areas of the world. By necessity, many obvious songs had to be invented, but I hope I've included some that will bring smiles of recognition to you, the listeners. Music Review, designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. In line with the focus of today's program on music about cities, question number one, who was the country singer who sang songs about cities in Texas, including El Paso and the streets of Laredo? Hint, here's a snippet of his voice from one of those songs.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Nighttime would find me in Rose's Cantina. Music would play and Felina would whirl.
So, who is this singer? Is it A, Willie Nelson, B, Gene Autry, C, Marty Robbins, or D, Johnny Cash?
My love was deep for this Mexican maiden. I was in love, but in vain I could tell.
And question number two, what was the name of the surf rock group who sang about the little old lady from Pasadena? Hint, here's a snippet from their only gold record, Surf City.
Two girls for every boy.
Sound familiar? Who is this? Is it A, the Safaris, B, the Beach Boys, C, Jan and Dean, or D, the Ventures? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May the 25th. Well, it was on this day, back in 1957, that Buddy Holly and the Crickets released their first record, That'll Be the Day, a UK number one and US number three hit. The song had its genesis in a trip to the movies by Holly in 1956. The John Wayne film, The Searchers, was playing. Wayne's frequently used, word-weary catchphrase, "That'll be the day," was the inspiration behind the song. It was also the first song to be recorded by the Quarrymen, the skiffle group that subsequently became the Beatles. 1957. And it was 51 years ago today, 1967, that Columbia and RCA Victor announced that they would have to raise the list price of mono albums by a dollar on June the 1st, 1967. It was the first increase since 1953.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central,
Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders. 3 conductors and 25 sacks on mail.
Our country music take on city songs is provided by Willie Nelson, who is here singing The City of New Orleans. As noted in songfacts.com, Arlo Guthrie is a prolific songwriter and the son of maybe the most prolific songwriters, but he didn't write this one. City of New Orleans was composed by the Chicago singer-songwriter Steve Goodman in 1970. Goodman wrote the lyrics on a sketch pad after his wife fell asleep on the Illinois Central train, where they were going to visit his wife's grandmother. Goodman wrote about what he saw looking out the windows of the train and playing cards in the club car. Everything in the song actually happened on that ride. After he returned home, Goodman heard that the train was scheduled to be decommissioned due to lack of passengers. He was encouraged to use this song to save the train, so he retouched the lyrics and released it on his first album in 1971. But it was Arlo Guthrie's cover in 1972 that popularized the song and brought attention to rail lines that were vanishing across Middle America. Many people who lived in rural areas relied on them to travel. Steve Goodman died on September 20, 1984, at the age of 36, after a long battle with acute leukemia. That same year, Willie Nelson covered this song and made it the title track of his album. Nelson's version was a number one country hit and won the Grammy Award for Best Country Song, and thus an honor bestowed posthumously on Goodman.
He's one of the greatest writers in the Spanish language. At the age of 42, he went back to Cuba. This is one of his last poems because he was killed within the year in an abortive uprising. After he died, people put it to a popular tune. Guantanamera.
Pete Seeger pays tribute to poet Jose Marti and a classic folk song about a city in Cuba, Guantanamo. As noted by Jerry Gottfried and Quora.com on the 23rd of December, 2016, Guantanamera translates to Girl from Guantanamo. The song was originally written by either Jose Fernandez, who used it in his radio programs, or El Diablo Garcia Fernandez claimed the song was about a woman he was romantically interested in, but she only had a platonic interest in him. Later on, Julian Orban selected stanzas from 4 different poems in Cuban poet Jose Marti's poetry collection to create the most well-known verses. Those lyrics are narrated by a Cuban man who wants to let out the verses of his soul before he dies. In the second verse, the light green may signify farmland or nature's beauty in general. Flaming red may be interpreted as the red triangle of the Cuban flag, blood, or general patriotism. The wounded stag is probably a symbol of Christ or Christianity. Thus, the second verse shows that the narrator is hard-working, connected to nature, patriotic, and Christian. In the third verse, the white rose represents both the purity of friendship and the narrator's appreciation of true friendship. In the fourth verse, the narrator tells us that he wants to join the poor and that he gains more pleasure from the simple wealth of the brook of the mountains than from the immense wealth of the sea. The words have more cultural meaning than literal meaning. The song is a symbol of national pride in Cuba and a symbol of peace and justice in the American folk movement.
My poems are also flaming crimson. My poems are like a wounded fawn seeking refuge in the forest. The last verse says, "Con los pobres de la tierra."
Thank you.
Johann Strauss' Vienna Waltz introduces our classical music tribute to cities. As noted in ViennaUnwrapped.com and Biography.com, Vienna Waltz is one of the oldest ballroom dances and originates from the French and probably also Italian peasant dances Volta in the 16th century and the German 18th century Walzen revolving dance. The traditional waltz ensemble is made of two violins and a bass. The waltz is performed in a three-fourths beat and danced with full body contact. While the closely danced waltz shocked the English and French courts of Elizabeth I and Louis XII, the Viennese loved it when it was introduced in Vienna in the 18th and 19th centuries. Johann Strauss, often referred to as Johann Strauss II, was born on October 25, 1825 in Vienna, Austria. His father, Johann Strauss the Elder, was a self-taught musician who established a musical dynasty in Vienna, writing waltzes, galops, and polkas, publishing more than 250 works. Johann the Younger went on to write more than 500 musical compositions, 150 of which were waltzes, and he surpassed both his father's productivity and popularity. Compositions such as the Blue Danube helped establish Strauss as the waltz king and earned him a place in music history. He died in Vienna in 1899. And in another classical music city song, we have Richard Adinsel's Warsaw Concerto. As noted in RedlandSymphony.com by Chris Myers, this song was composed in 1941 for the film Dangerous Moonlight. The tragedies and triumphs of war have inspired composers to some of their greatest work. Some pieces are an immediate response to their experiences, such as Shostakovich's Leningrad Symphony. In World War II, the birth of modern media caused governments to realize that artists could be more useful to the war effort in their trained discipline than as conscripted soldiers, and composers were encouraged to produce work that supported national morale and education of the public. In 1941, British audiences were treated to Dangerous Moonlight, the story of a Polish pianist caught up in the destruction of his homeland. Throughout the film, which is told largely in flashbacks, he is haunted by the strains of the Warsaw Concerto, his great masterpiece whose composition was interrupted by the German invasion. The concerto evolution in the film parallels the hero's recoveries from injuries sustained during an air battle, with tragedies and triumphs reflected in the unfolding themes of the piece. Brian Desmond Hurst, the director, originally intended to use Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto in the film. However, when the rights were too expensive, he asked Richard Adinsel to write a piece in a similar vein. Adinsel composed a single 9-minute movement from which themes could be drawn throughout the movie. The piece is never heard in its entirety in the film, revealing itself in bits and pieces as the story progresses. Released as Suicide Squadron in the United States, Dangerous Moonlight was a box office success, and the concerto itself sold millions of copies when released on record. The popularity of the work resulted in a trend of so-called tabloid concertos that appeared in movies such as Love Story and Hangover Square across the next several years, and the Polish government in exile awarded Adinsel the Silver Cross of Merit for, quote-unquote, outstanding service to Poland in the field of music. We'll be right back. Louis Armstrong performs this well-known blues tune about a city, St. Louis. As noted in songfacts.com, W.C. Handy, a middle-class African-American, wrote the music for St. Louis Blues in one of Memphis's Beale Street bars in 1912. Some say it was plagiarized. Handy was prone to wandering the streets of Memphis and copying down the songs of itinerant street musicians. Handy claimed that he was inspired to write the tune after meeting a woman in St. Louis, bemoaning the absence of her husband. "My man's got a heart like a rock cast in the sea," she remarked, a line Handy said he wrote into the song. The song was one of the first blues songs to succeed as a pop hit. Quarter century later, Handy said it was still bringing him $25,000 in annual royalties, earning him over $1 million in his lifetime. St. Louis Blues has been performed by numerous musicians of all styles, from Louis Armstrong and Bessie Smith to Count Basie, Glenn Miller, Stevie Wonder, and the Boston Pops Orchestra. No version is better than the one by Bessie Smith, accompanied by Louis Armstrong on cornet. Smith's version was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 1993, while the 1929 version of Louis Armstrong and his orchestra inducted in 2008. And then we have this big band contribution, Pennsylvania 65000. It is actually a telephone number in New York City, written in the two letters, five numbers format that was common in the largest U.S. cities from about 1930 to the 1960s. The name Pennsylvania Exchange served the area around Penn Station in New York. The number is best known from the 1940 hit song Pennsylvania 65000, a swing, jazz, and pop standard recorded by the Glenn Miller Orchestra. Its owner, the Hotel Pennsylvania, claims it to be the oldest continuing telephone number in New York City. While the hotel opened in 1919, the exact age of the telephone number and the veracity of the hotel's claim are unknown.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
Frank Sinatra provides this swing music take on this world-class city, New York. And as noted in songfacts.com, although many people associate this song with Frank Sinatra, it was Liza Minnelli who sang it in the 1977 film of the same name, which was directed by Martin Scorsese and starred Minnelli and Robert De Niro as musicians and lovers. Frank Sinatra began performing this in 1978 at concerts in New York's Radio City Music Hall. His version was released on his 1980 triple album, Trilogy, Past, Present, and Future, which was highly acclaimed and brought the singer back in the public eye. New York, New York quickly became one of Sinatra's signature songs. While many songs have been written about New York City, no song has captured the pride and elegance of the city quite like this one. The lyrics, "If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere," sum up what many New Yorkers feel about their city. Competition is intense, but success there is richly rewarded and very satisfying. This song also popularized New York as the city that never sleeps, which is true in the literal sense that many businesses are open 24 hours, but also in the figurative sense that you are expected to always be at your best. The song is written from the perspective of an entertainer who leaves a small town, tries to make it in the city. Instead of obsessing over the difficulties he will face, he embraces the challenges in anticipation of a new life in a vibrant city. Sinatra's from Hoboken, New Jersey, which is a suburb of New York City. By 1978, he had established himself as a legend in the entertainment industry, and his performance of this song gave it a credibility that no other singer could have bought. Tony Bennett had already aligned himself with San Francisco.
I'm gonna make a brand new start of it in old New York.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take ya. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go? Jamaica, off the Florida Keys. There's a place called Kokomo.
And in rock and pop music news, we have the Beach Boys' Kokomo. From songplaces.com, we learned that the song Kokomo was made in 1988 by a band from the 1960s for the soundtrack to a movie, Cocktail, about a man who goes to work at a TGI Fridays, a franchise name for the 1978 disco film. It is a song that mentions many, many tropical locations around the Caribbean, including Aruba, Jamaica, Bermuda, the Bahamas, Key Largo, Montego, Martinique, and Port-au-Prince. But chiefly it mentions Kokomo, a fine tropical paradise in the state of Indiana. Wait, doesn't that sound a little far north? Okay, there's also a Kokomo in Mississippi. Warmer, granted, but still not Mai Tai weather. Well, there used to be a place called Kokomo Island in the Caribbean, but it was actually named that by the Sandals Royal Caribbean Resort Cruise Line Company, and they named it after the song. Where does this leave us? We are not going to embarrass ourselves trying to dance in a hula skirt and trying to be tropical in Indiana, but we'll be saved. According to the band, the inspiration for the song was a poolside bar at a hotel in one of the little island towns in the Florida Keys.
Give me a tropical contact high, way down in
Art Garfunkel provides his take on the samba song Corcovado about the mountain overlooking the Brazilian city of Rio de Janeiro. This song is also called Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars. As noted in the article Best Songs About Cities, published in January 27, 2015 edition of The Guardian, bossa nova pioneer Antonio Carlos Jobim's greatest hit, the girl from Ipanema, described watching an unattainable beauty walk past a cafe in a hip seaside neighborhood of Rio de Janeiro. On Corcovado, he turned his gaze towards one of the mountains that looms over Rio and its famous statue of Jesus, Cristo Redentor, to the grateful lover who can see it from his apartment window, as Gilberto could in real life. It's a symbol of contentment and gratitude. The English version, Quiet Nights of Quiet Stars, adds sea and streams to the tableau, but this is already evocative enough.
So
So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, who was the country singer who sang songs about cities in Texas, including El Paso and the streets of Laredo? And I played a snippet of his voice as a hint. Correct answer, C. Marty Robbins. As noted in IMDb.com, Robbins is known for many styles of music, but fans remember Marty Robbins best for his cowboy songs. Songs like Big Iron, The Hanging Tree, and of course El Paso established Robbins as the master of the style of country music. He also sang the teenage love song, A White Sports Coat and a Pink Carnation. The song El Paso is the story of a gunfighter who dies after being shot. The song went to number one on Billboard magazine's country singles chart in December of 59, where it spent 7 weeks. It also became the first country song to win a Grammy. And the answer to our second question, what was the name of the surf rock group who sang about the little old lady from Pasadena? And I played a snippet of their voices as a hint. Correct answer, C. Jan and Dean. As noted in Genius.com, the premise for this song began as a continuation of a popular Dodge commercial featuring elderly actress Catherine Minner speeding down a street in a souped-up car and urging us all to put a Dodge in our garage. AllMusic.com adds, it's almost too easy to underestimate the importance of Jan and Dean in the history of rock and roll and its evolution into rock. Well, we've run out of time for today's special episode of Music Review based on songs about cities. This outro music, East St. Louis Toodaloo, is a song written by Duke Ellington in 1927. East St. Louis, by the way, is a city located on the western side of Illinois, on the Mississippi River, across from St. Louis, Missouri. It has recently been called the most abandoned downtown in America. So as we leave you and some of our cities, remember these words, kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.